is supported by Charter Pipeline, presenting an open house July 28th and 29th, including food, music, and internet training. Information available at 877-342-0882. Good morning and welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Melanie Summers, sitting in again today for Katherine Lanfer. Minneapolis police are preparing for possible protests surrounding an international animal genetics conference, which begins tomorrow in downtown Minneapolis. Animal rights activists are apparently making plans for a variety of protest actions, and the police are concerned that some of them might get out of hand, so they are making precautions and taking precautions and making plans to respond. The police say they will stop and question pedestrians in the area that may be acting suspiciously. The Minnesota Civil Liberties Union says the police department's actions may be going too far. Our guest this morning is Chuck Samuelson, the executive director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union. But first, we'll talk with Inspector Sharon Lubinsky of the Minneapolis Police Department. She's the downtown precinct commander. Good morning, Inspector Lubinsky. Thanks for being with us.
Certainly. Good morning, Melanie.
Well, how concerned are you about the potential for protest in downtown Minneapolis because of this conference?
We're trying to take a very cautious but sort of an eyes wide open approach to this. In terms of, I have some concern in terms of potential protests here, but also I think we also need to see what happens, who shows up, and sort of what the behavior of some of the protesters are. So we're really trying to take a very cautious approach and see what's presented to us down near the conference site.
And can you describe for us the main steps that the police department has been taking in terms of precautions?
I mean, sure. I mean, we've certainly tried to, or we have spoken actually with other police departments, in particular Seattle, which has experienced a large, very large protest, certainly much larger than we're going to see here. But I think it's a matter of pulling in best practices from other places, what worked well in terms of handling this, and not just the protests, but also what worked well in terms of making sure that you have enough resources, that the community, both the residents and the businesses, are well informed. So it really is an all-encompassing plan, not just police tactics, which is certainly part of that, but it's also keeping people informed.
And what are some of those things that worked well in other places?
Well, I think certainly Seattle as a city, I think, was overwhelmed. And you know, to their credit, I think they did many, many good preparations there, but I don't think any city would have been prepared for a march of 40,000 people, which is what they had, and we're certainly not going to have that here. So we're trying to have enough police on hand because, as I just heard just before this, the temperature is 62 degrees now, but I mean, typically this is a very hot time of year. We want to make sure we have enough officers so we can, no one has to stand out there in the heat and drop to the sidewalk in the heat. So we want to make sure we have enough officers who are fresh. And in some places the officers weren't fed for a number of hours, and that's not the way to treat people who are out on the front line. So we're trying to make sure that the needs of the officers out there are being met, and also keep in touch with the business community at the same time.
Now, of course, one of the things that's created some discussion is how pedestrians will be able to move about that area right around the hotel in downtown Minneapolis. Can you explain what your approach will be?
Sure. Yeah, and we've certainly talked a fair amount about this to try and get clarification about what our approach is going to be. And that is, again, it goes to that an area, a street, or sidewalk is public space, and that's how we treat it. And we will, if we have some legal reason, legal foundation to stop someone, well then, that's what we'll do. And that is no different than the normal course of everyday police business. You need to have probable cause to stop someone. There will not be random searches. There won't be random stops. And I just want to be very clear about that, we're going to have a reason if we stop and talk to someone about what they're up to over there.
And what sort of reasons might those be?
You know, it really is, it kind of, when you're speaking of public space, I mean, there's the general approach that public space is accessible to the public, and that's how we're going to approach this, but it does not mean, public space does not mean that anything goes in public space. I mean, no one wants to stand next to someone out on the sidewalk if they think that they have a knife in their pocket or a knife somewhere on them. So if we have some, reasonable suspicion that someone might have a weapon on them, then we're going to check that out. And that's what we would do in any situation at any time.
Well, what happens if a pedestrian is stopped by a police officer and they say, yes, I'm going to that protest over there?
Well, then we're going to, wish them well and tell them where, it really is something where, if someone simply says they're going to the protest, actually this is not an unusual situation. Downtown Minneapolis, where I'm the precinct commander, has many public spaces, government buildings, and that draws protests. And actually, I would say my officers handle protests here at least about once a week, certainly not of the size that we're probably going to see in the next week. But, protests are really not all that unusual. It's America. People want to have their voice, and it's not at all uncommon. So if someone says they're going to the protest, well, that's where they're going to go.
And so what is your overall goal in terms of managing this event?
Really, the overall goal, it's pretty direct, which is, I think balancing to make sure that that the needs of all are met, and that includes that the conference goes on with their business, that the protesters who show up to protest and not break laws, and that they're accommodated, but also that the many businesses and also frankly the many residents of that area are not going to be overly inconvenienced. It will be probably a rather unique week for that two-block stretch of Nicollet Mall, but we're really trying to make sure that business goes on as closely to normal as possible and minimize disruption and certainly minimize any injuries or damage to that area.
One of the reasons why this caused so much of a stir was that it appeared from the reports the other day that your actions towards pedestrians was going to be a little bit more involved than what you've described this morning. It sounds a bit different than the reports. Did the police department change its approach because of that?
No, certainly not. I mean, really, as we came into this, our basic approach, for example, for the media has always been access. There's no restrictions on the media. There is no restrictions on protests sites. And actually, it was unfortunate, but the way that the story came out yesterday was packaged in such a way to make it seem as though many people were going to be searched. So it was somewhat in the packaging, and really our approach today is the same as it was a week ago or a month ago, and that is access to the site, and if people are acting in a peaceful way that doesn't stop the business of the area, then that's just fine with us.
And then on the other side of the coin, there are some folks who wonder if the police department is sort of overreacting, if you're kind of blowing this all out of proportion. What is your response to that?
Well, I think it's when dealing with many different people, I think we have very much tried to reach out and have reached out to the businesses, to the residents, and sometimes people are going to be frightened by the information, but as we put out information, I think our approach again is to, I would rather put out information, and sometimes people hear that and they are frightened, but I personally believe it's better to put out information rather than withhold the information, and because at least with information people can make their individual decisions on how they choose to respond to that.
Inspector Lubinsky, we're going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Inspector Sharon Lubinsky of the Minneapolis Police Department is the downtown precinct commander and is in charge of the planning process for the protests and for the International Animal Genetics Conference, which will take place in Minneapolis starting tomorrow night. And now we'll turn to our guest for the rest of the hour, Chuck Samuelson, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union. Mr. Samuelson, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you.
And what do you have to say to what you just heard from Inspector Lubinsky? What's your response?
I'm pleased. I mean, I think that based on what Inspector Levinsky just said on the radio and what she's been saying on television, in all fairness to her, for the last 12 hours or so. The Civil Liberties Union, while continuing to take a look at this, is much more comfortable than we were when we saw the press releases initially out of the police department and when we talked to the reporters.
Talk about your concerns at that time.
The press releases that we saw indicated that the Minneapolis Police Department was prepared to set up barricades and was prepared to search and interrogate any pedestrians that crossed into the area of the hotel. That violates a host of constitutional principles. And I can understand from the police department's point of view their interest in preserving law and order, especially because of what happened in Seattle. No other urban police department wants to be caught like Seattle was caught. I can understand the businesses not wanting to have windows broken, business disrupted, property destroyed, and all that other stuff. But the United States of America is a democracy. We were founded with demonstrations. I mean, the Boston Tea Party is certainly worse, or was certainly worse, than anything we're likely to see here in Minneapolis. Most of the civil rights marches, the women's suffrage, the abolition, all of them were demonstrations. It's an ancient and honorable American tradition, and it's sloppy, it's messy, and that's democracy.
Well, what would be wrong with, under these sorts of circumstances, stopping pedestrians who are walking past the Hyatt? I mean, well, specifically talk about...
You have a constitutional right to public spaces, as Inspector Levinsky mentioned. It's a public space, it belongs to the public, and you have a right to be there. The police do not have a right to what we call suspicionless stops. They can't set up barricades. That's against the Minnesota Constitution. They cannot designate a certain area and then frisk or search or interrogate everybody in that area. That's against the U.S. Constitution. All of these are relatively recent decisions by the Minnesota Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court. So quite clearly, what they were talking about doing 2 days ago, which is radically different from what Inspector Levinsky's been talking about now. But 2 days ago, that was an egregious civil liberties violation.
Mm-hmm. But if I'm a person who's in that area, don't I have a right to feel safe, too?
Sure. Violence is not legal. It's not protected by the Constitution. The police have not only the right, but the duty and the obligation to arrest people who commit acts of violence and vandalism. And by the same token, they don't have the right to squelch dissent because it's loud and sloppy. And but if they block traffic, they can be arrested. If they do damage to persons or property, they ought to be arrested.
Our guest this morning is Chuck Samuelson, the executive director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, and we are talking this morning about the preparations that are being made for possible protesters to take action in downtown Minneapolis against an international animal genetics conference, which gets underway tomorrow night. Many animal rights activists have promised that they will protest the activities of this conference, and the police department is taking many precautions to try to avoid disturbances and violence and destruction, that sort of thing. And we're wondering what you have to say about whether or not the police approach is the appropriate one. Do you feel as though the police are overreacting to the situation? Are they not doing enough? How do you feel about the personal rights of people who are going to be in downtown Minneapolis over the next several days? Give us a call here at mid-morning at 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you're listening, it's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. This is mid-morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Melanie Summer, sitting in for Catherine Lanfer. Mr. Samuelson, can you talk a little bit about how you balance, the personal safety of people who are in that area and free speech for the people who have legitimate right to protest and express their opinion?
That's the $10,000 question, and it's a gray area. Our government depends on free dissent, just like our economy depends on a free market. And the marketplace of ideas typically starts out with things like demonstrations. At the same time, people have a right to feel, as the Constitution says, secure in their person and possessions, and that balancing act. The classic, of course, is the First Amendment decision, Oliver Wendell Holmes, saying that that free speech stops when you start yelling fire in a crowded theater.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, the free speech rights of demonstrators or of anybody else can be restricted with very specific time, place, and manner restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that not only in our opinion, and we would differ from the police department, we would tend to take a broader view of the free speech rights than, say, the police department would. Not only were what the police was, not only was what the police department suggesting that they do violating the free speech rights of the people, but it violated their Fourth Amendment rights, which is the right to be secure in your person and your possessions. And that was a bigger and clearer violation than the First Amendment violations, in our opinion, that they were proposing. It's clear to us now based on what, or is more clear to us now based on what Inspector Lubinsky said, that the Fourth Amendment problems have been significantly assuaged. And, you know, of course, we're going to watch with interest what happens over the next 5-6 days.
And how will you do that?
We will have volunteer spotters out there, some on the street, some in buildings around, watching that area with notebooks and cameras, and we'll see.
And then what happens if one of your spotters spots something that you believe is a violation of Fourth Amendment rights or First Amendment rights or whatever?
We have a wide range of options, everything mm-hmm. from sort of whining about it to yelling and screaming to taking them to court. And it depends on what the violations are, how frequent they are. Is it an aberration? In other words, are we talking about sort of rogue officers, or are we talking about a policy of the department? And there are different responses.
Mm-hmm. In general, as Inspector Lubinsky said, it's not uncommon for protests to occur in downtown Minneapolis or throughout the Twin Cities, for
right.
that matter. How would you characterize the overall response of the Minneapolis Police Department to those sorts of events?
They've been very professional, and that's another reason why this was such a surprise to us. They tend to be very, very good, but the protests, according to Inspector Lubinsky, are typically much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is the Seattle incident,
yes.
And part of it is they don't really have a handle on who's going to show up and how big it's going to be or how aggressive the protesters are. They don't know, and so they're taking a worst case approach.
And is that a bad thing?
I don't know. Talk to me on Tuesday.
Okay, we will. We have Matthew on the line from St. Paul would like to join the conversation. Good morning, Matthew.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
I'd just like to comment on the comments that Sharon Lubinsky had made. It seemed that she was a little vague on, you know, she said she could stop someone on suspicion of having a knife. That just seems really radically vague. I'd like to hear what the Civil Liberties Union representative would have to say about that, and I'll take my comment off the air.
All right, Matthew, thank you.
Thanks.
That is a gray area, but we do give our police officers the right as a professional to determine whether or not, and there's guidelines that have been imposed by the courts, whether or not to search somebody. What Inspector Lubinsky was talking about are concealed weapons, and they are deemed a threat to the officer. And the officer then has a right to be more aggressive in their stop if they believe that someone is carrying a concealed weapon in an area that could personally harm them. And that's what I've heard her specifically talk about. What I haven't heard is sort of other things besides concealed weapons.
Right. I guess that's sort of the crux of this here, is how can you tell if someone's got, you know, violence on their mind, or something, if they don't have a weapon on their person, what suspicious
activity
could they be displaying?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's clearly things that we need to look at. She's made the comment that they're going to behave as they've always behaved, and if we'll take that at face value for now, and then we'll just have to see. And if in fact that's what happens, then the demonstrators' rights probably won't be violated. Again, I'm talking, I should always be using future tense and conditional clause or whatever my English teacher would have had me do.
Okay. Next on the line is Shane from St. Paul. Good morning, Shane.
Hi. I had a short question.
Yes.
If generally Roblox or stopping everybody and searching everybody is not permitted, what's the justification for permitting it at airports and courthouses? And I'll hang up and take my answer over the phone.
Okay. Well, this is going to be a slightly involved answer. As citizens of Minnesota, we operate under federal law and under state law. And if you take the federal constitution, that is the minimum rights that can be taken away from you, so to speak. The state law can expand on those rights, but it can't be less than the federal rights. Under the federal constitution, the Supreme Court has said that these kinds of airport searches and that are perfectly legal. And under state law, we've said that the courts have said that roadblocks are illegal. The balancing act is always individual liberty versus public safety, and from a police point of view. And that's the teeter-totter that we go back and forth. So phrases like liberal and conservative really don't apply. They're used frequently, but they really don't apply. What we're talking about is individual freedom versus public security or public safety.
And so in the case of airports and courthouses,
that's federal, and so different rules apply.
And so it's been deemed by the courts and others on the federal level that the interest of public safety on an airplane, for example, outweighs my individual
Fourth
freedom.
Amendment right to to avoid a generalized search. Now, whether or not the Civil Liberties Union agrees with that is a moot point, I mean, at this point.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned roadblocks. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Roadblocks, are they illegal in Minnesota?
In Minnesota, roadblocks are unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
There was a movement, as you maybe know, the drunk driving laws have stiffened considerably over the last decade, thanks to public interest groups demonstrating, the Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and et cetera. And the laws have been strengthened and enforcement's been strengthened. And one of the things that the law enforcement people were doing were setting up roadblocks at 1 o'clock and simply giving everybody a breathalyzer. And the ones that failed the breathalyzer got arrested. The Supreme Court said that these are random, suspicionless searches. There was no specific reason to stop a specific car. And if you talk to, it's fairly complicated, but, for example, the State Patrol, and I'm sure Minneapolis and everybody else, are trained to look for certain kinds of behavior patterns and relating to drunk driving. And interestingly enough, these stops tend not to be as racially biased as the officer discretionary stops tend to be, which is a whole other interesting problem.
Interesting. Next, we have Michelle from Minneapolis on the line. Good morning, Michelle.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to sort of what the other caller was talking about. I think the insinuation that, you know, the majority of these callers are, or not the majority of the callers, but the majority of the protesters, you know, are there, you know, possibly with concealed weapons. I think that those are pretty outrageous, you know, I don't know what you'd call them, I guess predictions to be making about people who might be out there. And I mean, if they're just saying, you know, well, they could have a concealed weapon, that's going to lead to a lot of other possible infringements of their civil liberties.
Thank you, Michelle, for the call.
Certainly it's something that we'll be watching. But, you know, I suppose I should stop at this point and make sort of the ACLU advertisement. We need police. And we need police to represent the community, to be part of the community. We need police in our society. That being said, there is frequently a tension between police practices and civil liberties issues. And we quite frequently, on specific tactics, disagree with the police department, sometimes vehemently and sometimes more quietly. The caller's concern is potentially justified. On the other hand, to put yourself in the shoes of a police officer for a moment, it's not a job that I would want to do.
Mm-hmm. We're talking this morning with Chuck Samuelson, the executive director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, and we're talking this morning about police preparations in Minneapolis for the International Animal Genetics Conference, which will be going on in downtown Minneapolis for the next 6 days, starting tomorrow. And there's some concern about the potential for protests against the conference and whether or not those protests might get a little bit out of hand and what the police are doing to prepare for that. We're talking about how you balance individual freedoms versus the safety of the community this morning with Mr. Samuelson, and we'd like to hear what you have to say as well. If you'd like to join our conversation, call us at 651-227-6000 if you're in the Twin Cities. Anywhere else you're listening, it's 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. I'm Melanie Summer, sitting in this morning for Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. And we'll continue our conversation in just a couple of minutes after we hear the latest in the news from Patty Marsicano.
Thanks, Melanie. Good morning. A bleary-eyed President Clinton has left for Japan, but the leaders of Israel and the Palestinians are still at Camp David, trying again to work out a peace agreement. Before leaving the talks, Clinton said the gaps remain substantial, but there has been progress. The military is deciding how to dispose of as many as 40 World War II-era bombs discovered in a bay in Hawaii. The Navy says the bombs are being treated as active, even though there is no way to determine whether they are still explosive. The bombs are believed to have gone into the bay some 55 years ago. A pharmacist from Seattle is suing the drugstore she works for because it does not cover contraceptives in its employee health plan. Jennifer Erickson says she hopes to turn the case into a class action. She says she became frustrated when she had to constantly tell customers they would have to pay for their birth control pills because their health plans didn't cover contraceptives. She says, however, many of those same plans cover Viagra, abortions, and vasectomies. Erickson contends it's sex discrimination. In regional news, Northwest Airlines reports second quarter net income of $115 million. That's up 12% from the previous year. It's a stronger performance than industry analysts had predicted. Northwest says relatively full planes and continued improved performance in the Pacific Rim helped offset the increased cost of fuel. Governor Ventura promises his next two-year budget will be leaner and meaner than his first one. Ventura told the Associated Press nothing is untouchable. Though it is not due until early next year, Ventura said he's been using his summer to work on the budget blueprint, which lays the foundation for legislative debate on taxes and spending. The state weather forecast for today, partly to mostly cloudy skies, a chance of rain in the southeast, a chance of rain in the northeast this afternoon, the high statewide ranging from the lower 60s to near 70. In Albert Lea, it's 63, in Bemidji, it's 54, in Brainerd, it's 57, in Duluth, it's 58, and in the Twin Cities, it's 62. That's the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. I'm Patty Marsicano.
Writers and writing on All Things Considered.
Ashtrays and lamps and knives and pans of boiling water are all lethal weapons.
Two of them are just ecstatic because they're the dirty old man in the book. And then two of them are real angry because they're the dirty old man in the book.
I used to say that I was the worst thing that a Syrian Christian girl could be, which was thin and black and clever.
All Things Considered. Weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities. Today's programming is supported by members who volunteer their time for Minnesota Public Radio.
You're tuned to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Melanie Summer, sitting in this morning for Catherine Lanfer. And our guest this hour is Chuck Samuelson, the executive director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union. And we're talking this morning about preparations being made by the Minneapolis Police Department to react to possible protests downtown as an international animal genetics conference gets underway tomorrow in Minneapolis. Some animal rights activists and animal rights groups have said that they will try to disrupt the conference, and their police are preparing for what could be a difficult few days. It's difficult to predict what might happen, but this morning we're talking about the preparations being made by the police department and whether or not they are appropriate for the situation. Mr. Samuelson, next we have Michael from Minneapolis on the line. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. My question that I have is regarding what, Mr. Samuelson, what's your belief, or if there's any concern of the police in Minneapolis using the loitering statutes to do some street cleaning. I understand that that statute's come under some attack as being overbroad or perhaps being extremely vague. And I'm actually referring to statute, I think it's 385.50. And I was just wondering if there's any concern that you have that they may, in fact, be using probable cause or reasonable suspicion to do a street cleaning and arresting under that statute.
Thanks for the call, Michael. Could you define, Mr. Samuelson, what the loitering laws say first before you answer that question?
No, I'm not familiar with the loitering laws, so I unfortunately can't describe that in terms of what they specifically say. The caller's right, though. The loitering laws in many cities tend to be, they're broad, and they tend to be enforced with a significant amount of discretion. The Civil Liberties Union is going to be watching that, and you know, we would like to see narrowly tailored laws and not laws that allow for unequal enforcement of the law.
There are so many disagreements and discussions about how these things should be enforced, obviously. There seems to be a lot of heightened concern over public safety and that sort of thing, gang activity and those sorts of things. And I know sometimes loitering laws and loitering statutes have been used in those sorts of situations,
right,
for example.
And some of them have been declared unconstitutional. Chicago v. Morales is the case that, you know, and I'm not a lawyer. I mean, this is just common knowledge, at least in the ACLU community. That was the Chicago gang ordinance. That was struck down last year by the U.S. Supreme Court. So, yes, these kinds of laws are potentially of concern, and that's the reason that we watch and that the Lawyers Guild watches, just to get a sense of how the police respond and whether or not their response is appropriate, and then to record the information.
But they certainly are also under pressure to make our community safe and neighborhoods safe and that sort of thing.
Well,
again,
and
it's that balancing
and,
question.
Yeah, exactly. It's a balancing question. And we as people have a very heightened fear of personal safety that, at least statistically, is not borne out. And I'm not sure what the cause for that is or what the solution to that is, but we are pushing our legislators, or at least those few of us who vote, are pushing our legislators to, you know, pass more laws and have stricter penalties and do all sorts of things that are, we believe, bad for civil liberties.
All right, next we have Pamela from Inver Grove Heights. Good morning, Pamela.
Good morning. I was responding to Melanie's earlier question, don't I have a right to feel safe? I'd say that's exactly the question, and if the police can search me with minimal cause, I no longer feel safe. I'll be avoiding downtown not because of any fear of protesters, but because of a real fear of a police overreaction. And I can't help wondering if businesses are concerned that fear of the police will have a negative impact on sales. Also, even if I was a legal protester, I can't think of any reason why that would justify searching me. That sounds so much like a police state that it frightens me.
Hmm. That was clearly our thought 2 days ago. I think the quote that was attributed to me was totally accurate. It's appallingly unconstitutional. And certainly if the police department had pursued that line, we would already be in court.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just make perfectly clear your observations about what the police department has done in the last couple of days.
Well, certainly,
in terms of the policy that has been stated.
From our point of view, the police policy stated 2 days ago was appallingly unconstitutional. Barriers and suspicionless searches and that kind of stuff. Over the last 18, 24 hours, the police department, at least in our opinion, has modified what they're saying. To be much more of a civil libertarian point of view, and we applaud them for that. And we also applaud, frankly, the media, which generally gets slammed a lot and stuff like this, but it was the paper that brought this to our attention and to the attention of the people, your radio station, television stations, and it's been reassuring to see that the media is doing at least what I feel the media ought to be doing. But clearly, there's been at least in our version, or in our view, there's been a radical shift in the statements by the police department, and hopefully they're planning and their execution.
Even though the police department says they have not really changed their policy, that it was a misinterpretation.
Even though that's what they say.
All right. Next on the line we have Wally from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Good morning, Wally.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Hey, I'm calling because you know, you were talking about equal enforcement of the law, and I'm wondering, it was mentioned that some protesters had said they were going to possibly disrupt the conference, although that's not the attitude of most of them, obviously. But I wondered, you said that barricading is a civil rights violation. What do you think it's the law is even as far as keeping protesters at abortion clinics a certain distance when they pray? And just as I wanted to ask a second question, just because I overheard it as I was waiting on the phone here. There's estimates that up to one-third of policemen in urban areas have post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, is the Civil Rights Liberty or Civil Rights Organization you represent, do they do anything to address that and to try to help the police deal with the fact that they have that problem?
Thanks for the call, Wally. I'm not sure if you can respond to the second half of that question, Chuck Samuelson.
We're a small organization. We don't have the resources to do that, and it's not our brief. I mean, our brief is to protect and defend the constitutional rights of people in Minnesota. In terms of abortion protesters, mm-hmm. They do have a free speech right. There are some, they can't block the clinics any more than this demonstration can block entrance and egress to private property, or that a union, when they're picketing, can totally encircle a building and not allow anybody in or out or traffic in or out. But other than that, they have the same free speech rights as these demonstrators would have. And in fact, the Supreme Court just had a case, and it's from another state, and I can't remember the state. Colorado, maybe, or Nebraska, or someplace, where the law ordering them to protest.
I think their limit was
away.
eight. They couldn't get it, and they couldn't get any closer than 8 feet from a client,
right,
or a staff member who was going in or out of the building.
Exactly, but intimidating people and threatening people is not free speech. Let's make that perfectly clear. Violence is not constitutionally protected. And so free speech, when it's speech, is protected. And political speech is the most protected of all speech.
All right. Next, we have Pamela from Minneapolis on the line. Good morning, Pamela.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make the statement that it is my belief that PETA, as an organization, will be very well organized. I'm a member of PETA and have been for about 10 years, and I receive all their mailings and updates on their protests. And apparently,
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in Seattle, according to their publication, as I understand it, was that when the windows started being broken and acts of random violence started happening, that was opportunistic by people who had come in and were just vandalizing. It had nothing to do with any of the protesters or their organization or what they were staging at the time. It was opportunistic people from the street. So they really take a lot of time and effort. They put out extensive mailings, information, about how they handle these things, and in my opinion, they're very well organized. They're very respectful of the public, of the space, of whatever else is happening, and I don't think they'll be a problem at all.
Are you planning to be there at the protest?
Well, I think I would like to be, but I'm not quite exactly sure of the location and the time. Could you tell me?
Unfortunately, I don't have that specific information. I know there's a planning meeting that's been going on tomorrow evening for some of the organizations. I'm not sure about yours.
Oh, okay. Well, I just I suppose if I call the police department, I sure would find out where it is, wouldn't I?
Perhaps. Thank you very much for the call, Pamela.
You betcha.
Chuck Samuelson, I think maybe some of Pamela's point is that if you're part of an organization, it depends on what your organization plans as opposed to individual actions.
I think there's some point to that, and I think that at least from what I've heard about the Seattle troubles, that's the story that we've been getting. But let's not lose sight of the fact there were 40,000 people mm-hmm. in Seattle. And I've been to Seattle. It's not a huge city. I mean, downtown Seattle is packed along the waterfront. So, I don't know. I'm not looking for anything like that in terms of numbers here.
And by extension, then, does that mean the level of disruption might not be as great either?
That's my assumption, yes. My assumption is that there's so many bad apples in every barrel, and the more barrels you have, the more bad apples you have.
All right. Our guest this morning is the executive director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, Chuck Samuelson, and we're talking this morning about preparations in downtown Minneapolis on the part of police officers and to a lesser extent the community around there for possible protests over the next several days targeted at the International Animal Genetics Conference, which is going to get underway tomorrow evening. If you'd like to join our conversation here on Mid-Morning, we have full phone lines right now. Give us a couple minutes. 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities. Anywhere else you're listening, it's 1-800-242-2828. Next on the line is Jennifer from Plymouth. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to say that I'm all in favor of the police going a little overboard with the planning because of this one reason. If they don't, and they know that there is a potential for a large number of people upset, I think that it would result in us having a show like a week from now about, you know, how could we have possibly stopped these riots from happening. And so for that, I would like to support the police for all of that. I understand that a couple days ago they had some roughly put-together media package, but what she said today was much more at ease for me, and they're not going to waste their time searching people that aren't doing something that they shouldn't be, because they're aware that there's a number of people out there who could be. So I think that for Joe Average walking down the street, that's not going to be a problem. Anyway, so if you can go ahead and comment on that,
we'll do. Thank you, Jennifer, for the call.
A Joe Average walking down the street does not need the protection of the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is designed to protect minorities, people who are unpopular and ideas that are unpopular. That's why they were put in. And she's speaking for, I believe, the majority of the people in this area. Even during the sort of Vietnam War era, the majority of the population opposed the demonstrations. During the Civil Rights Movement, even a greater majority opposed those demonstrations. And it's been that way historically. Demonstrations are typically used by minority viewpoints to be heard, because the media, especially the for-profit media, is going to broadcast the opinions of the majority, because they need to get the majority to listen or read or watch.
Do you think the police department is over-preparing for this?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a specialist of the police department. Certainly, 2 days ago, I would have unequivocally said yes, that not only were they over-preparing, but they were just over the line.
All right. Next on the line is John from St. Paul. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Hi.
I just have a couple comments. That first, I want to say that I think the police department's statement that they changed their whole line and everything is being purposely deceitful, because as soon as they get a bad reaction from the public, they decide that they're not going to say that anymore. And it doesn't really make any difference to me, I think, whether what they say, it's what they do that's important. And from what I've seen in the past with the Minneapolis police against activism, I mean, I was in the recent May Day, and people were attacked. We had broken bones in people and tons of other. I mean, Minneapolis police are really brutal, like, countrywide, you know. So I think they're being deceitful, and like, watch out and see what happens, because it's going to be a little different than what they're saying.
All right,
John.
Thanks for the call.
That's exactly our intention.
To watch, you mean?
To watch out and see what happens.
Have you? Were you observing the May Day demonstrations?
No, actually, we weren't. They kind of that was something that just popped up. We were totally uninformed and unaware, and by the time we knew about it was over.
And what did you hear about what happened?
We heard of police assaults. We are investigating some of them, and that's all I can say about that.
Next, we have Charlene from Minneapolis. Good morning, Charlene.
Good morning. I live right across the street from where the protests are going to be, and with my 1-year-old, and I just feel so much more secure knowing that the police are prepared for anything that is going to take place. I think as far as police violence too, that there's not going to be, the more prepared that the police are for the protesters, the less threatened they are going to feel, and the less chance there is going to be that they are going to break the civil liberties of the protesters.
It's hard to say.
All right, thanks for the call, Charlene.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a valid point? The protesters might feel more comfortable knowing the police are well prepared?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm old enough to have been in the Vietnam protests. And I can remember some of them where there was a real hostility there, and where it was kind of a let's get it on attitude. And I can remember others where it was much more of a mellow, to quote it, using a very old word, atmosphere. And my fear is that at some point, being prepared and maybe over-prepared and making the kind of statements that were made a couple of days ago is simply going to be drawing the line in the sand, and everybody's going to be charged up, and it's not going to take much to have something happen. And that's a concern of mine.
All right. We have Chris on the line next from Northfield. Good morning, Chris. Hello?
Hi.
Oh, I'm sorry. Chris hung up. Who is on the line, please?
This is Paul from Duluth.
Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Well, I'm in all favor of the police taking every precaution they need for the safety of people that aren't going to be in the protest. I'm for people protesting peacefully. However, the Seattle protests, people were chained together with iron bars. They set up tripods to block traffic. To me, that's not a sign of peaceful demonstration. They wear ski goggles. They have bandanas around their face. Again, that's not a sign of a peaceful demonstration. And police officers, I believe, need to take every precaution to safeguard businesses and innocent people. And they have the right, if someone's blocking traffic, to tell that person to move. And if they don't move, that they will be moved. I believe protesters have to obey the law, and I'd like to see your opinion on that.
All right,
or
Paul.
Or get a comment.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Paul. Mr. Samuelson?
Well, his beliefs certainly represent a significant viewpoint, you know, in the electorate or in the population. But once again, the civil liberties of people are rights. They are not legislated. And I think that one wants to be very, very careful when one talks about squashing public dissent. You know, these are the kind of arguments that the Chinese communists used in Tiananmen Square, that the Soviet Union used in Czechoslovakia and Hungary, and that the Nazis used in Germany in the 30s. So I don't know that we want to go there, I guess is what I'm saying.
All right. Next on the line is John from Minneapolis. Hello, John.
Good morning. I'm a business person in Minneapolis, and I understand the concerns of the businesses in the area. However, I've talked to trained eyewitnesses who were in Seattle, and what I've heard from those people who were there and saw it in person, who I know through my community organizations, they said that the reports we heard in the media have been highly distorted, that in fact the people that did the damage in Seattle were not pursued by the police at all, but instead they turned their attention to the people who were sitting in the street, who certainly could have been arrested, but should not have had the violence done to them. Also, that there have been three major incidents in Minneapolis by our Minneapolis police, who we pay for as citizens. And clearly, we need police protection. We need what police do. I'm not against them. I'm a business person. We need the police to do their job. But on December 20th, the 98th raid out at the Highway 55 in July, when the trees came down, July of 99, the police violence there, and on May Day of 2000, eyewitnesses that have documented the police abuse, and there's not been one police officer that has had any enforcement against them for their violent acts. Now, they should arrest those people if they're violating the law, but there's no reason that the police should be beating those people or torturing them or using any other kinds of punishment on them. That's for a judge to do. They should arrest them, handcuff them, take them away, but they don't need to punish them and harm them. And the last point I'd like to make is that even that this was proposed by the city of Minneapolis, and the mayor of Minneapolis is in charge of the police department, through the chief, what the police department's policies are. And to me, I'm terribly concerned that our mayor of this fine city of Minneapolis would propose even to think about such a thing. I'd like to find out what Mr. Samuelson thinks. And I want to thank you for having this program. I think this is very, very important.
Thank you very much, John, for the call. Mr. Samuelson.
Well, regarding the May Day demonstrations, that I have no comment. I just can't say anything about that. Regarding the release of that information, I couldn't agree more. The press release, the fact that this was considered, his comments about the mayoral control of the police, yes, these raise significant concerns. If this is the thinking at within the police department, you bet we're very concerned about that.
In general, what is your observation about how the police in Minneapolis deal with these sorts of things?
Well, the police in Minneapolis, let me rephrase this. We receive complaints from all over the state on a wide variety of issues. On police complaints, we get significantly more complaints regarding the behavior of the Minneapolis Police Department, significantly more than we do from any other police department, or even, frankly, from all the other police departments put together.
And what does that tell you?
It tells me that there is, and you know, at the very most charitable to the police department, there's a huge disconnect between the police and the people of Minneapolis. To be most attacking to the police department, it tells me that there are significant problems which could even be structural in terms of how their officers are trained and disciplined and so forth and so on.
We have time for Leanna from Minneapolis. Leanna, can you make your comment fairly brief, please?
Yes. Joe Public is everyone. There's not a certain profile of an American, and we all need the protection of the Bill of Rights. Also, the Minneapolis Police Department is connecting to the community with their clubs. That's what's going on. So, ACLU, keep up the good work. Thanks.
All right, Leanna, thank you very much for the phone call. Mr. Samuelson, in the minute or so that we have left, talk a bit about what your organization is going to be doing while this conference is on, while the potential for the protest is going on, and if there's any steps that you might take if you see things that you don't agree with.
Well, we have numbers of members who will be watching for the entire day of the conference, and any MCLU members who want to volunteer to serve as observers, they can call the MCLU office and just let us know. We'll get a hold of them and tell them what they need to do and schedule them for an appropriate slot. And if we get information that things are getting out of hand, the police are getting out of hand, we will not hesitate to go into court.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Very good conversation.
Thank you.
Chuck Samuelson is Executive Director of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm sitting in today for Catherine Lanfer.
Coming up on Sound Money this week, we go inside the mind of the individual investor. This is Chris Farrell, and my guest will be Santa Clara University finance professor Meyer Stottman. What makes an investor tick? We'll find out. Plus, Erica Whitlinger tells us about tech gorillas. It's all on Sound Money, Saturday morning at 10, again Sunday afternoon at 5 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW-FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.